This is number 0052, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0052. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, author and therapist Dennis Palumbo, who has written Mirror Image, the first in a line of mysteries with a therapist as the hero. So what's it all about?
This is the first book in the series, and I'm very excited because it takes place in Pittsburgh, which is my hometown, and the hero is a therapist like I am, though he's much braver and more resourceful than I am. But it's a pretty exciting series. It's full of suspense, and it has a real nice twist at the end that most readers don't see coming. And from what I hear from readers, they're pretty shocked when they read it.
We have a return visit from Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. She has some theories on the JetBlue flight attendant who went postal and quit by blowing open the emergency slide and leaving the plane.
Actually, one of the things that's so great about the story is from day one in training as a flight attendant or stewardess, whatever you want to call it, it's don't blow a slide, don't blow a slide. You know, we don't care if somebody's dying in the aisle, just disarm your door, you know, like, because it's such a hassle and it costs so much and they send you back to training. So I think probably he had always thought, it's drilled into her head over and over again, don't blow a slide, don't blow a slide. He thought, you know, F it, I'm going to blow a slide and take a couple beers and run away.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
I'm Stuart Nullman. On this edition of Book Banter, Carol Burnett shares with us 11 years backstage at her hit CBS variety series with This Time Together, as well as some favorite ear-tugging behind-the-scenes classic TV memoirs. So don't touch that dial. It's coming up next in view on the Stuff File program.
And, of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0052, is fitness specialist David Sisko, or as we like to call him, Spodicus. He owns a couple of gyms in Montreal called Sisko Gyms. You can check out his website at www.siskogym.com. And I would also like to thank David for his generous donation to this show, which reminds me, you can find the donation button on my website and on my blog. It helps to keep this show running. Whatever you'd like to donate is fine. You can give as little as a dollar. Let's get right to the stuff. And by the way, thank you, David, for being the guest later on this edition of the program. Let's talk about names to start things off. And we go to Pittsburgh for our first story, Pittsburgh being the hometown originally of Dennis Palumbo, our first guest. More on that later. A judge has denied a Pittsburgh-area man's petition to legally change his name to Boomer the Dog. 45-year-old Green Tree resident Gary Guy Matthews says he filed for the name change in June because he's a fan of the short-lived 1980s NBC television series called Here's Boomer, which featured a dog that rescued people. Judge Ronald Foligno denied the request. He says it could have resulted in confusion in the marketplace, including in business records and public documents. He also says the name could confuse an emergency dispatcher during a crisis. Meanwhile, speaking of names, in Everett, Washington, an ex-convict was jailed on a charge that he harassed a nurse who laughed at his plan to name his newborn after late mob boss John Gotti. John Keneth allegedly told the nurse back in March that he would strangle her for laughing at him. He was charged with felony harassment and has been free awaiting trial. But on Monday, a county superior court judge ordered him held on $1 million bail. According to prosecutors, Keneth spent the past few months trying to trick people at Stevens Hospital into giving him the nurse's identity, and he finally learned it. That led to concerns about her safety. Keneth was arrested late last week after being chased around by local police and U.S. Marshals. His previous convictions include a drive-by shooting and assaulting someone with a piece of pipe. He's going to be such a great dad, isn't he? Moving right along, you know how I feel about cats. They're little pieces of evil, evil plotting the overthrow of mankind. But no one's paying attention to me, and of course, when it finally does happen, you'll realize I was right, but it'll be too late. Anyway, we go to Germany for this story. A cat, home alone in Germany, apparently turned on the vacuum cleaner, frightened itself half to death, and wound up being attended to by emergency services. Police said a neighbor heard the cat's cries, not to mention a vacuum left running for hours, and feared there'd been a terrible accident of some kind. The fire service sped to the scene, but found only the cat and the machine. A police statement said the emergency call wasn't entirely in vain, though, because at least the cat could be calmed down. I think it was just some plan the cat had that went terribly wrong. Something that he's doing in R&D. He'll figure it out later. But then again, when he does, for everyone else, it'll be too late. Okay, let's talk about people with anger management issues, shall we? Starting off with a story from Toledo, Ohio. A security video from a McDonald's in Ohio shows a woman punching two restaurant employees and smashing a drive-through window because she couldn't get chicken McNuggets. The tantrum, caught on tape in Toledo earlier this year, shows the customer reaching through the drive-through window, slugging one worker and then another. She then grabs a bottle out of her car and tosses it through the glass window before speeding off. It happened early on New Year's Day, and we did talk about the story on a previous show, but police say Melody Duchesne was angry that McNuggets weren't being served because it was breakfast time. Duchesne was drunk at the time as well, and she was sentenced to 60 days in jail just last month in order to pay McDonald's for the broken window. The reason why I'm bringing the story up again is because it was just last week that the video was released when it became part of the public record. And you can now go online and see the video. It's going viral. People are looking at it left, right, and center. If you haven't seen it yet, there is a link on my website at thestufffile.com. On the What's On page for this show, show number 0052, you can check it out and you can see her tantrum as she can't get her McNuggets. You know, I love McNuggets, but I have my limits. Okay, still, people with anger management issues. State police said a woman wiped a dirty diaper on the window of another woman's vehicle during a dispute in a traffic jam as both were leaving the Fayette County Fair. Jessica Hollis, 23, of Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania, had been charged with harassment in the incident, which state police in Uniontown said happened at about 10:30 p.m. last Saturday. Now, police said Hollis smeared the diaper on the rear window of a vehicle driven by 36-year-old Melanie Campbell of Hopewood. Police said the women began arguing while they were stuck in traffic leaving the fairgrounds in Dunbar Township. That's a very, very angry woman there. In Bismarck, North Dakota, a North Dakota inmate was not afraid of making a spectacle of himself when he grabbed another suspect's glasses and started to eat them. Burley County Sheriff Major Les Witkowski says the 42-year-old inmate at the county detention center became frustrated August the 1st when he was not able to talk to the chaplain, so he swallowed both lenses and a piece of the metal frame. He had been booked on an aggravated assault charge. I guess he just can't stop. That was just 5 hours earlier, by the way, that he was booked on that charge. Witkowski says the inmate was taken to hospital, to the emergency room, but was returned to jail after doctors determined he was okay. The glasses were worth about $250. Authorities are considering a criminal mischief charge against him. Assistant State's Attorney Lloyd Scher says he'll be looking into the incident. So the last three stories, basically, are all people who have anger management issues in one shape or form. Some of them alcohol-induced. Some people are just, well, angry. In all cases, perhaps what might be good for at least some of them, if not all of them, therapy. They could definitely use some therapy. And that is my subtle segue to our first guest. Dennis Palumbo is a writer and licensed psychotherapist. The former Hollywood screenwriter worked on such television shows as Welcome Back, Kotter, but he also wrote the screenplay to one of my favorite movies of all time. I have the DVD. He wrote My Favorite Year, that Peter O'Toole film. Well, he's written a new crime novel called Mirror Image, published by Poison Pen Press, which was just released. And he joins us on the line from California. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
My pleasure.
So with all the things that you do as a psychotherapist, you found the time to not only write this book, but a book that is, I understand, the first in what you hope to have as a series.
That's right. It's the first to introduce a new character, a psychologist named Daniel Rinaldi. He's a trauma expert who consults with the Pittsburgh police. And this is the first book in the series. And I'm very excited because it takes place in Pittsburgh, which is my hometown. And the hero is a therapist like I am, though he's much braver and more resourceful than I am. But it's a pretty exciting series. It's full of suspense, and it has a real nice twist at the end that most readers don't see coming. And from what I hear from readers, they're pretty shocked when they read it. So I'm very pleased, and I'm very excited.
So even though you say he's much braver than you are, he is in the same profession. He does hail from the same hometown. So how much of Dennis Palumbo is in this character?
A lot. He's an Italian-American. He graduated from the University of Pittsburgh, as I did. And much of his background, his childhood, the places he makes reference to, where he grew up, he worked when he was young in the produce yards, and I worked with my dad's grocery store and often went down to the produce yards. So there's a lot of autobiographical material in it. I mean, much has been changed, but there is a lot. And, of course, I never consulted with the Pittsburgh police, but the character is really drawn from me. And the thing that I really liked is, you know, that he was born as I was in the old Pittsburgh, you know, the Pittsburgh of steel mills and coal barges and blue-collar workers. And Pittsburgh now is a city in transition. It's a very modern city, very, very high-tech. Very, you know, a lot of MBAs and CEOs and people wearing jackets and ties. And the steel mills where I worked when I was in college are all gone now. So the Pittsburgh that people tend to associate in their mind is a city 30 or 40 years ago. It's not like that now, but it's in transition. And I think that's what makes it an exciting setting for a mystery, because it has these brand new skyscrapers and lots of multinational corporations in it, and at the same time, buildings that are 200 years old. And they're right next to each other downtown.
So let me get you to put your psychotherapist cap on for a moment and ask this hypothetical question. Dennis Palumbo comes into your office and lies down on your couch, and you find out that he's written this character that is also a psychotherapist, that it comes from his hometown. What would your analysis of patient Dennis be?
I would probably say that he's had all of these thoughts and feelings about his hometown, and he's always loved mysteries, and so he put the two of them together. The thing that I like about the book is that through the character of Daniel Rinaldi, I get to talk a lot about the state of the modern mental health system and how people respond to trauma. You know, in the last couple of years, people have been traumatized a lot, whether it's Hurricane Katrina or, you know, 9/11 or the economic crash. And that's why I made Daniel a trauma specialist. He deals with people who are in extremis, who've, like, survived violent crimes or other kinds of traumas. And it also, like I said, gave me an opportunity to talk about all of my experiences as a training therapist. One of the backgrounds of the novel, one of the places against which, you know, much of the mystery and suspense happens, is in a private psychiatric facility, a kind of high-toned facility, very similar to the one at which I was an intern. And so I get to look at the ways in which clinical work is done now, the positive and the negative. And I weave an exciting murder mystery throughout the story.
Well, tell us a little bit about the characters and the storyline, with, of course, out of course, giving too much away.
Oh, no. It's actually a kind of a exciting premise, I think, in the sense that the novel opens with our hero, Daniel Rinaldi. He has a young patient who has begun dressing like Daniel and wearing glasses that he doesn't need and growing a little beard, and he's so trying to mirror his therapist. And Daniel begins to realize, well, this guy is so fragmented and has such a lack of identity that he's trying to look like me. And, you know, Daniel presents this case to his peers, who all go, well, you're crazy. You shouldn't let him do that. But Daniel is convinced this could be helpful, that he can help this kid work through this identification. Unfortunately, this patient is murdered. And when he's murdered, the police and Daniel realize that Daniel himself was the intended victim. But the murderer mistook this kid for Daniel because this patient was dressing like Daniel and looked like him and was walking toward his car in the parking lot, which was right next to where Dr. Rinaldi's car was. So the killer accidentally got the wrong person. So consumed with guilt, Daniel Rinaldi, our hero, is determined to help find the killer of his patient. And that's the story.
Now, you've written this first novel, and as you say, you hope to make it into a series. Have you started writing the others or follow-ups?
The others? Oh, your mouth to God's ears. No, I've started making notes on the second one, and I think I know what the story is going to be. But it's a long way between now and getting to write the end on the second one.
Even though you haven't started writing the second one, are you anticipating that there are things you will learn about the character that you don't even know now?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I like about writing is I sometimes think that I write to find out what I think, you know what I mean? To find out what's on my mind. And I think that I'm looking forward to seeing where Daniel's going to go, you know, who he's going to meet, who his love interest, because he has a real nice love interest in the first novel, and he develops some friendships, particularly with one policeman, and that friendship is going to continue in the second book. And there's about four or five recurring characters that I've established in the first novel, including Daniel's best friend, who is a guy who runs a bar and is a paranoid schizophrenic. And so his best friend is someone he met at a psychiatric facility. And thanks to the miracle of modern medication, his friend Noah is a schizophrenic who's kind of controlled by his meds, but always right on the edge of crazy. And so he's a fascinating character as a best friend, I think. And we're going to see things that happen to him in the succeeding novels.
I mentioned in the introduction that, of course, you started your career as a Hollywood screenwriter. So putting that cap on, even though it's one that you retired many years ago, would you like to see this character come to the big screen?
Oh, are you kidding? I would love to see Mirror Image made into a film or even a TV series. I think it's a remarkable character. One we haven't seen before, and I think that it would make a wonderful, terrific movie.
In your head, have you cast it?
No. I must tell you, my favorite depiction of a therapist so far was Gabriel Byrne in the HBO show In Treatment. But I don't have in my mind exactly who should play Daniel Rinaldi.
Now, I alluded to the film that you did, My Favorite Year, which is one of my favorite films. I did not mention another book that you have done, which is also one of my favorite books, From Crime to Crime, which was a collection of mystery short stories. And I believe when I had you on the old radio show, I asked you then, is there any chance of some of those characters coming back to light? So I'll ask you that question again.
Well, you know, I've been so busy. I haven't had time to write some more of those short stories, but people ask me about them all the time. So I feel like as soon as I catch a breath, I might write another one of those mystery short stories. They've been really well received.
And they're a lot of fun, as is your latest one, which is called Mirror Image, which is just out. It's written by Dennis Palumbo. The book is published by Poisoned Pen Press. And I thank you very, very much, Dennis, for taking the time to be on the program with us once again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure for me, Peter.
Dennis Palumbo, author of Mirror Image. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0052. And you'll find links to Dennis's site, plus links to Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, a return visit from Betty in the Sky with a suitcase. Yes, flight attendant Betty is back. Plus, we'll hear from Stuart Nellman and another edition of Book Banter. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day. But right now, more stuff right here for you. Horacio Torre, age 31, of San Francisco, has been arrested and charged with theft. Now, Torre was riding on his bike when he allegedly grabbed a cell phone out of the woman's hand that he just passed by. The phone was a special unit used to demonstrate real-time tracking with an embedded GPS chip, and she had just gone outside to test it. So the woman simply went back inside her office, where her boss was able to bring up the exact location of the phone on a computer screen and relay the information to police. Torre was captured within minutes, a half mile away. Well, at least he's healthy. Half mile in a few minutes is good lungs. What are the odds, the woman's boss asked, that you would grab someone's cell phone during a demonstration of the ability to track the phone's location in real time? Well, considering the fact that I just read the story, apparently in San Francisco, I guess the odds are fast approaching 100%. So, there you go. On to Iowa. An Iowa restaurant owner says he'll pay a fine after his head chef was videotaped kissing and licking toads in the kitchen. The Scott County Health Department reviewed the video and called in the chef and owner of the Osaka restaurant in Davenport and issued a $335 ticket. Food inspector Lindsay Goroshek said several violations were committed during the video. On the tape, Chef Christopher Turla is seen with two small toads on the prep table. He kisses the toads a few times, licks them, then stuffs them in his mouth. Turla said it was meant as a joke. Ha, 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 ha. His brother videotaped the kitchen antics and posted them on YouTube. Yes, everything's on YouTube these days. Restaurant owner Yidi Wen said Turla is just a funny guy who needs some more training about restaurant sanitation. To Indiana we go for our next story. Police said a man who had been drinking alcohol to celebrate his release from prison crashed his bicycle into a railroad crossing gate in northwestern Indiana. The engineer of a South Shore commuter line train saw the 49-year-old man ride into the crossing gate and fall from the bike. The train stopped to check on the man, who was on the ground next to the tracks in Hammond. Police said the man was drunk and that he told officers he had been trying to beat the train, but didn't know how he wound up on the ground. The man's brother told police that he had been drinking all day after his release from prison. You know, that's dangerously close, this guy is, to being the idiot of the day, but he's not. Because when we get to the idiot of the day, oh, it's a doozy. More on that later. Moving right along to Kentucky is where our next story comes from. A group which had left a northern Kentucky bar with Christopher Luttrell feared the worst when their friend went for a late-night swim in the Ohio River. The friends called police at around 11:45 p.m. Police called out water rescue teams from Boone and Campbell counties, the U.S. Coast Guard, and the Bellevue Fire Department. The Kentucky Inquirer reported that Luttrell's father came down to the riverbank, worried about his 26-year-old son. Just before 4 a.m., police said Luttrell called his father to say he swam to the Cincinnati side of the river and was completely safe. Police Major Lee Estrup said He plans to talk to the prosecutor about possible charges. Estep said people just don't drink and swim because authorities are afraid they will drown. Well, in this case, he didn't, so what exactly is the crime he committed? If anything? Swimming under the influence? Well, apparently, he did it pretty well. Okay, moving right along, let's swing our way across a bigger body of water, all the way to Germany. German police stopped a 79-year-old man for veering into the wrong lane in his car, only to learn he had been driving without a license because his license was withdrawn half a century ago. Officers in the western city of Oberhausen asked to see his license after the man steered into the oncoming lane while pulling into a grocery store parking lot. The pensioner handed over his identity card and car registration, but said he had lost his driver's license. Well, that's an understatement. A preliminary investigation revealed that the 79-year-old had his license withdrawn. According to a police statement, computer records from the Federal Motor Transport Authority showed that he was banned from driving until June of 2031. That would be one day before his 100th birthday. The man, whose name was not released, had his license revoked in 1959 for drunk driving. When he repeatedly took to the roads anyway, a judge stripped him of his permission to drive for the next 72 years. A police spokesman, and this is the quote of the day, I think, said he would likely face a fine and strict enforcement of his driving ban. Really? Strict enforcement? The man has been driving without a license for almost 50 years. Maybe not strict enforcement, just any kind of enforcement would be a plan here. I'm just saying. Now, you know, there are some people out there who really, really, really don't want to pay child support. How far would they go to not pay child support? Well, there are deadbeat dads, and then there is 35-year-old Ronald Booby McIntyre of Chicago. And yes, his nickname of choice is Booby. That basically says it all, doesn't it? Anyway, Booby wanted so desperately to avoid paying child support that he jumped out of a third-floor window to elude police officers and then tried to crawl away from them with two broken legs. He was wanted for failure to pay almost $6,000 in back child support. He's now in hospital recovering. His previous criminal record includes 80 convictions and 14 arrests. Amazingly, and this is the part that just baffles me with all the convictions he's had and how hard he tried to get away from police, amazingly, a judge ordered him to remain free until his next court date, which is set for October. October 19th. That's a long time between the time he's arrested and the time he has to be in court again for a guy who likes to run when he can. What, this guy defines the term flight risk. Judge, don't you watch Law and Order? Come on. Anyway, well, speaking of flight risk, and there's another subtle segue for you. A while back, we had Betty in the Sky on the program with us. She has a podcast called Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase, which is now also the name of her book. Well, we just thought we'd have her back because of the news of Steven Slater. You all know about Steven Slater. That's the JetBlue flight attendant who had a complete meltdown just a little while back. Well, Betty's on the line with us right now from California to give us her thoughts on this very important story. Hi, Betty. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, nice to talk to you again.
As I said when you were on the show with us the last time back in April, you were probably one of the happiest, perkiest people I have ever met in my entire life. I guess we can't say this, unfortunately, about Steven Slater, although he has become a bit of a folk hero because of what took place on the JetBlue flight, and I guess a lot of people empathize with what he's been through.
Actually, you know, it's amazing how it's just taken fire on the media. Like, it just touches everyone. Everyone can understand. It's like, I guess a lot of people, especially if you're in the service industry, have maybe had a fantasy about quitting in like some epic fashion, but you know, very few people do it the way he did it. And the way he did it was so funny, how he took the two beers with him. Actually, one of the things that's so great about the story is actually from day one in training as a flight attendant or stewardess, whatever you want to call it, it's don't blow a slide, don't blow a slide. You know, we don't care if somebody's dying in the aisle, just disarm your door, you know, because it's such a hassle and it costs so much and they send you back to training. So I think probably he had always thought, since it's drilled into our head over and over again, don't blow a slide, don't blow a slide, he thought, you know, F it, I'm going to blow a slide and take a couple beers and run away.
Well, and one of the reasons I wanted to call you is because everybody has boiling points in their jobs and
yes.
thinks of what they can do in a similar situation. Even in their mind, if they never would do it, they imagine it. Have these kind of thoughts gone through your head, happy as you always seem to be?
Yeah, you know what, actually, I don't plan on blowing a slide and jumping out anytime soon because I really still like my job. And actually, I don't get to that point that often, probably because, you know, I like to travel so much and the travel benefits and the job is so good for me that I'm not, I think a lot of people are disgruntled and aggravated, you know, so much has changed with the travel industry. It's not the job that it used to be. I understand why a lot of people could, you know, are aggravated and could get to that point, but I don't even fantasize over something like that. I actually have no intention of quitting at any point.
Well, at the time of this taping, news reports are now coming out that Stephen himself may have been the actual aggressor, and I don't know whether that's the case or not. The story is changing rapidly as
right.
time goes on, but let's go back to what we
okay.
know for sure. At one point, he was accosted by a passenger to the point where it drew blood.
Yeah, and you know what, actually, that's what I feel was the breaking point. And I actually have gone through something like that with a passenger. And I think once you're actually physically assaulted, it puts you in a different state, whether that could be an emotional state or an angry state, because you can take so much verbal abuse, but once you're actually hurt, and then I think, you know, because the woman didn't apologize after he was hurt, so then he was sort of treated less than human, you know, because, you know, we apologize for the weather, you know, for security, all these things we have no control over, yet somebody actually hurts us and doesn't apologize, it probably just sent him into a rage.
Well, I was going to ask you, what would you have done in this situation, but as you say, you've had something like this happen to you, so what do you do? What would you have done in his case?
Well, you know, actually, one time, not that long ago, I had something happen where I actually got injured and the woman didn't apologize. It, like, didn't even matter to her that I was hurt. Can you imagine if I hurt a passenger, how much groveling I'd have to do? And actually, for me, I got teary. It turned me emotional, which I never get emotional at work, but, you know, actually being physically injured, you know, put me into a different mental state. But, like, obviously, if he has anger issues anyway, I think once he was actually physically hurt, that's what sent him over the edge.
Now, with all the hype that's going on around this, and we live in a time when security is tighter, lineups
yeah.
are longer, the peanut bags are smaller.
Right.
All these things that seem to annoy passengers. It must be difficult for a flight attendant these days to deal with less happy people who are now passengers.
Yes, actually, with the you know, there's less amenities, there's a lot more delays, all the hassles and security. Most the traveling public realize how it affects them, but they don't think about it how it affects the flight crew. We have to go through security and take our shoes off and do everything like they have to do, and it can lead to a very tension-filled cabin, which wasn't the case back in the glamour days. You know? So the job has changed so much, and then I totally understand how he, you know, lost it.
Does the media attention to this particular story, does this itself also kind of make your job harder or easier? Will you be getting a lot of empathy, or have you seen empathy from other passengers since this incident, or the opposite?
You know, I'm actually very curious to see how that's going to play out. I haven't worked since the big media coverage. I worked the day it happened, but I actually was telling people about it on the plane, and they were like, what? They hadn't heard of it. So, but what I'm actually hoping happens from this is maybe people will actually think about travel etiquette a little more. And actually, what I hope doesn't happen out of this is, you know, there's always that term, you know, going postal. I don't want there to be like a going postal, you know, stewardess style or something. I don't want them to think of us like that.
In the meantime, what everyone should just simply do is chill out.
Right.
Listen to your podcast, Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. Read your book.
Yeah, and actually, you know what's funny about the book? The subtitle of my book is Hilarious Stories of Air Travel by the World's Favorite Flight Attendant. And now I feel like I have to hand that title over to Stephen Slater. I think now he definitely is the world's favorite flight attendant.
Now, on another note, you like to keep your anonymity, and that's why we refer to you as Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. We don't know your full name. We don't talk about those type of things. Have you ever gone on a flight and seen somebody reading your book?
I haven't seen that, but actually it was just about 2 weeks ago. I made a PA about what we were serving on the plane, what the complimentary snacks were, and we took the beverage cards out, and this man said to one of the other flight attendants, he goes, "Was that Betty? Was that Betty? Which one is she?" The other flight attendant was like, "It is her. She's over there." Actually, it was the very first time that somebody just recognized my voice on the airplane.
Wow.
So that was fun.
Well, again, people can listen to the podcast, and they can check out your website, and they can read your book. And fly safe, Betty. I thank you very much for being on the program with us again.
Thank you so much. Happy flying.
You too. Betty, the flight attendant, who is the author of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0052. And you'll find links to Betty's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do have Stuart Nullman with us in another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program. And Stuart, I know it's self-prophecy, but I'm so glad we have this time together.
Ow! Ow! I tugged my ear a little too hard. Sorry, Peter. Ouch! Yeah, well, now that we mentioned those little references, you know what we're referring to. Carol Burnett!
Carol Burnett, yes.
Yes, because on this edition of Book Banter, we're looking at a book called This Time Together. Now, throughout most of the 70s, the Carol Burnett Show was a Saturday night viewing habit and was one of the mainstays of CBS's stable of successful programs during that decade. Because every Saturday night at 10 o'clock, viewers were treated to an hour of wildly funny comedy sketches, lavishly choreographed musical production numbers, an impressive caliber of celebrity guest stars, and all of them effectively helmed by the versatile Carol Burnett. Now, how can you forget Eunice? The classic movie spoof, especially the Gone with the Wind movie spoof, which is one of the all-time favorites, or how Tim Conway always managed to have Harvey Korman break up laughing during the sketches they performed together, or maybe Carol Burnett's favorite Tarzan yell. So for 11 years, the Carol Burnett Show was probably one of the best examples of what a classic TV variety show was all about and how it should be put together. And this was a time when the variety format was starting to fade very quickly. Now, Burnett still has many fond memories of putting together over 250 shows with her dedicated cast of regulars and production staff led by her then-husband, Joe Hamilton. And she gives her many fans a star-studded treat with her book, This Time Together. This is a companion book to her 1986 bestseller One More Time, which covered the early years of Burnett's life. But this book focuses on her life in show business from her years as a struggling actress in New York during the 1950s to her first major Broadway successes in Once Upon a Mattress, her Emmy Award-winning stint on The Gary Moore Show, too, of course, The Carol Burnett Show, and just slightly afterwards. Now, what makes this book so easy to read and so easy to enjoy is that she tells a lot of her tells about her successful showbiz career, and it's mainly a collection of interrelated anecdotes dealing with her stage and TV successes, and also encounters with celebrity as well. A couple of my favorites is one about how Tim Conway and Harvey Korman felt compelled to entertain Cary Grant every time they were invited to his private box at a Hollywood racetrack, that at one point they got so burnt out that they ended up declining future invitations. Or why she regarded Gomer Pyle star Jim Nabors as a good luck charm and had him as the show's guest star for the season premiere for every show throughout the run. So, and even when she was taping some of her Emmy Award-winning specials during the 60s and 70s, they happened during snowstorms. And that was good luck to her. Yeah, amazing, huh? And also, Mrs. Wiggins was actually conceived as originally as an old doddering woman. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, you know, there's another point that no one ever brings up about Carol Burnett is she's not a singer. And I bring that up for a point. She came out of the Gary Moore show, and she was a great comedic actress, and of course came from Broadway as well. And yeah, with the exception of singers, and of course Lucille Ball, who didn't do a variety show, she did a straight sitcom, many women never got a chance to helm a one-hour show.
No.
Except the singers. You know, you had Dinah Shore, you had early on, you had Judy Garland, who did a lot of specials. But if you weren't a singer, if you were a comedian, women didn't get to run the show.
No, I mean, and this is, I guess Carol Burnett is a rarity in this example, but what a rarity. I mean, she was so talented.
Yeah.
And now she's a TV icon because look what she helmed. I mean, this is an amazing accomplishment. But this book, This Time Together, it's a very light, entertaining read. And it's a showbiz memoir that refuses to be controversial and hostile in tone. It's basically an appreciation of a memorable career in television from one of the medium's legendary stars, who's eternally grateful and appreciative that she managed with her friends, families, and colleagues, and of course her fans, that she had this time to share together.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say it is not mean-spirited in any way, and how refreshing is a book like that, especially in these days and time?
Oh yeah, very rare, especially in this world of gossip, and more malicious gossip.
Yeah. So, tell us about the book again. It's titled.
It's called This Time Together by Carol Burnett. It's published by Harmony Books, and it's $29.95.
And what can you recommend in a similar vein?
Well, I recommend first of all Stephen Davis's excellent 1987 book, Hey Kids, What Time Is It? About the life and times of Howdy Doody. Especially, you learn about things about that, how that show was put together in the primitive days of television, especially the infamous blue rehearsals. Hey, it's a kid's show. They have to let off some steam.
Right.
Excellent book. And also, because I'm a Marx Brothers fan, I have to admit, but Groucho's 1976 book, The Secret Word is Groucho, about You Bet Your Life and how this show virtually revived his entire career in the 1940s and 50s when it was hitting the skids. So it's told from not only from Groucho's point of view, but also from the people who created the show, which was Bob Goodell, who also created the Art Linkletter's programs, his writers, his George Fenneman, even some of his best-known contestants. It's a real interesting book to read. And if you can't find these books in stores, they're always available at your secondhand bookstore, no problem.
And since you brought up books that are not mean-spirited, I know it's not in the same vein because we're talking about Hollywood, not necessarily television, but I'll toss in David Niven's books.
Oh, yes. The Moon's a Balloon and Bring on the Empty Horses.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. I mean, they may not have been autobiographical, but they were anecdotal and very entertaining.
Absolutely. Where can people find your stuff, sir?
Well, you can read Book Banter every week online at the West End Times new website, www.westendtimes.ca. That's where you'll find me every week.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nolman, and another edition of Book Banter here with me, Peter Anthony Holder, on the Stuff File program.
The Stuff File.
And we're coming down to the home stretch on this edition of the Stuff File program with me. But before we get to the idiot of the day, a few more news items to share with you in the Stuff File. A fellow by the name of Joe Sugarman. Well, he is a guy that United Airlines calls a 1K customer. That means he flies over 100,000 miles with them every year. In other words, an extremely good customer. So Joe was more than shocked at the way United treated him on a recent flight from Austin, Texas. Now, Joe was on his way home to Las Vegas from a seminar and settled into his first-class seat when he asked the flight attendant, "Are you serving any meals during our flight?" A few minutes later, Joe says, two armed Austin police officers boarded the plane, looked at me and said, "Sugarman, follow us." In the flight attendant's defense, she says she thought Joe asked her if there were police on the flight. But come on, lady, you couldn't even say, "I beg your pardon," or "would you repeat the question" to confirm that you had an evil plotting terrorist on board? A United customer service agent later explained to Mr. Sugarman that after hearing from the flight attendant, the pilot was not going to take any chances and asked that he be removed. Oddly, United was willing to take a chance on the next available flight, which left 2 hours later from the same airport, with Sugarman on board. On his website, joesugarman.com, Joe writes that from now on, American Airlines will be getting his business. And by the way, if you want to read what Joe had to say, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com and you'll find links to Joe Sugarman's website and his plight with United Airlines. Anyway, this reminds me, starting on September the 1st, the Stuff File will be offered as part of Taiwan's national carrier China Airlines in-flight entertainment system for long-haul dynasty flights. They include routes from Taipei to Sydney, Taipei to London, also to Amsterdam, Zurich, Vancouver, Los Angeles, and New York, just to name a few. So does this mean we won't be doing any more airline stories on the program? Yeah, right. They'll continue. So for those of you who travel on China Airlines, look forward to the Stuff File program starting September the 1st. On to other stories. Two uniformed police officers in New Westminster, B.C. here in Canada were standing in line at a Starbucks to buy coffee. When they got to the front of the line and started to give their order to the clerk, a man cut in line ahead of them to rob the store. It wasn't that the robber had no clue that they were cops in the area. The officers had stopped to talk to him on their way in. The astonished officers wrestled the robber to the floor and took him into custody. Now, don't make too much fun of the robber, because maybe he thought the cops went into the Starbucks next door, or the one next door, or the one next door to that, or the one next... Well, you know, they're on every corner. Anyway. Bruce Tuck wants to take back his confession in the rapes of four women in Martin, Tennessee. Tuck claims police coerced his statement with unfair means. He's 275 pounds, and the jail diet he was on made him so hungry that he only confessed when a detective offered the defendant a bag of chips and a cold drink in exchange for talking to him about the cases. This according to his court filing. Investigators say there is overwhelming evidence against him, including a positive DNA match. Tuck, a former police department jailer, now faces 60 years in prison if convicted. And no more chips until his parole. I guess that Lay's potato chip commercial is absolutely correct. Nobody can eat just one. And apparently people will do anything for that bag of chips, including confessing to crimes, whether they're guilty or not. Must be some good chips. Wow. On to the state of Washington for our next story. Fire department officials in Belfair, Washington are upset with the local water district. Officials there ordered padlocks put on all fire hydrants. They didn't even bother to tell firefighters of the move, nor did they give them keys. Now, Belfair Water District Manager Dave Tippin says he doesn't understand firefighters' concerns. This is a quote. He says, "We are trying to protect our resource," noting that the water district loses 8 to 10% of its water to leaks and also thefts, and that he has even been driving around at night trying to catch somebody, but apparently with no success. Now, according to the fire chief of the area, that would be Bo Bacon, he says any significant time that's lost waiting for a water district official to come and unlock the hydrant can have a disastrous outcome on an emergency situation. He also noted the fire department has solved the problem by buying bolt cutters to cut the locks off. This Belfair Water District manager, Dave Tippin guy, he was almost the idiot of the day. But he's not. Wait for it. It's coming. Meanwhile, you'd think it would be one of the safest places in America. That would be inside the jury box. Apparently, it's not. In the Bronx, New York, 20-year-old juror Jennifer Mercado stands accused of stealing another juror's credit card and then going on a wild shopping spree, buying up more than $500 worth of shoes and clothing at stores near the courthouse. At the time, Mercado was serving on a jury for a burglary case. Although indicted by a grand jury, she has pleaded not guilty. If convicted by a jury of her peers, she could be looking at 4 years in prison. Now, she could have been the idiot of the day, but she's not. Wait for it. Okay, talk about setting a bad example. A spat between Utah parents split their daughters who had been friends. Then things got really weird. Police say Danette Stark, age 37, manipulated a photo so it looked like her daughter's former friend was having sex with a dog, then passed the image out to the girl's school. Nice parenting. Nice parenting. She has pleaded guilty to 3 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor, according to the Salt Lake Tribune. I don't know what's more embarrassing, the crime itself or the fact that she appears to have been arrested in a Twilight t-shirt. I've seen this woman's mugshot. She's wearing a Twilight t-shirt. In more ways than one, Danette Stark, grow up. Really. You know, she came dangerously close to being this week's idiot of the day, but she's not. This next person is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Way to pay attention there, meter maid. In Seattle, a parking enforcement officer gave a parking ticket to a dead man who was in the front seat of the car at the time that was parked. The officer had marked cars with chalk at about 9:30 a.m. and returned just after noon to find one car with the chalk mark still parked in the same place. Since this was a 2-hour parking zone, the officer decided a ticket was in order. The driver, a 36-year-old man, appeared to be asleep in the driver's seat, and the officer rapped on the window to wake him up and tell him to move the car, but she got no response. So rather than call for help, or, better yet, open the unlocked door, yes, the door was unlocked, she just assumed the man was a sound sleeper and put a $42 parking violation on the car's windshield. About a half hour later, the real police got a call from the man's girlfriend who, with a friend, had found his car. She called a car dealer to get the vehicle's GPS position. The girlfriend found all 4 doors unlocked, the sunroof open, and her boyfriend unresponsive, and the parking ticket on the windshield. Seattle fire medics pronounced the man dead at the scene. The cause of death is unknown, and the police said there was no sign of violence. The sunroof was open. The doors were unlocked. The meter maid could just have simply opened the door and checked to see if the guy was, at the very least, not sick. But no, she just slapped a $42 parking ticket on his windshield. There could be only one reason, just one reason, why she would do this. She's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0052. You can go to the website, which is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0052. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me at facebook.com/PAHolder and twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand and Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. That's it. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.